Okay, I think we should be all set in terms of the recording. Again, very warm welcome to all of you. It's our second lecture at the Introduction of Corporate Communication course, and we have, the head of our discipline in corporate communication, Chiara Valentini, here today. Chiara will continue a little bit on the topics that Vilma Luomaaho introduced to you on the very first lecture. We probably get a little deeper dive on stakeholders, but something else as well. So, Chiara, the floor is yours. You can introduce yourself and get going with the lecture, and we can go from there. So, there you go.
Thank you, Matthias. Can you hear me on the back? Because the audio is a little bit strange here. Yes, great. It's my pleasure to be here. I was first thinking how to start this lecture, how to start after Vilma, my colleague, who I know she's very outspoken. And something that came in my mind is very much about how we are facing today challenges in this very global, very polarized society. And as I pointed this maybe provoking title, what I would like to do today is trying to take you on a journey to rethink about some things that maybe sometimes we give it for granted as something that we think, it's like, the usual business or how individuals operate, organizations operate. But before entering these discussions, a little bit about myself. And as Matthias said, since 2 years I'm running the corporate communication discipline. So beside teaching, and I teach also a course on corporate reputation management. Maybe some of you will take this course next year. I teach also crisis communication management because the things are quite related. And I will touch upon a little bit some of the things related to crisis issues even today. I think for those who will decide to engage in working communication, you will soon realize that when you start working, one of the first things that company, organization ask it is, can you fix this problem? Can you change the perception our consumer, employees, or whatever groups of individuals have about us? Like if we were magicians, we'll change the attitude perception. There is this kind of understanding of communication as the one who fixes, a little bit like a doctor who comes and patches that. Of course, there is a lot of histories around, and a lot of the communication theories are based on psychology, on social behavioral studies. So we get to know how our mind works and why we act and think in a certain way. And we leverage this knowledge to persuade, to convince stakeholders. That's one of the things we do. But we do also much more than that. So it's not only about that. Beside working at GSB, I also have an adjunct professorship in Italy. I teach a course on corporate public affairs, which is essentially lobbying. Do you know what is lobbying? Yes. So I teach students there how to promote and advocate social political issues to convince political stakeholders, meaning politicians, decision makers, to take certain direction other than that. And why so? Because nowadays companies and organizations are doing a lot of these things for different reasons. I also have some other appointments, not academics, but I also been for some time involved with international associations, professional associations in the field of strategic communication, public relation, communication management. And by the way, all these terms are very much related to same kind of discipline or area. And I sit also in some journals, perhaps that is a little bit less important, but what is quite maybe important is that lately I've been invited to an international association called R2WH Page Society, where the major companies, CCO and CCO, are sitting. So I have the opportunity or the blessing to interact with highly top leaders and professionals in communication around the world. So what are we going to talk today? Matthias has somehow also give you indications. I want to start with these two concepts, stakeholder publics, that you might have read already, heard about it, and it comes and goes. But there is some slightly difference in what they mean. And this difference is important when we are addressing communication and we are addressing issues, for instance, that these individuals or organization, they are not always individuals themselves, play. And specifically, I would like to look at from the communication side, so look at the role of communication in this interplay on that side and give you some ideas on issues and crisis and how they challenge stakeholders. So that's a little bit the program for today, which I hope we can have informal more dialogue to some extent. So we'll ask you also some questions and small activities, but do not be afraid about that. And I think we will have at the end also some question time, right, Matthias, as the planning. Okay. Question, comments so far? Please come here. I think there might be some space more there, not on the door. The room is a little bit small. It's quite pretty room, I must say, but yeah, perhaps not the most convenient for large lectures. Okay, so to start with, I want to start with your views, your understanding. This is not a book test. It's just really your thinking. So please use your phone and scan the QR code. It will open in a page where you just need to type, like, you know, your thinking, who is a stakeholder from your point of view? Because I want to really hear your opinions, and that's what matters. So I'll give you a few minutes to look at this, and then we'll look at your definition as well. All right. Thank you. By the way, after, I will send this to Matthias so that he can upload it in the Moodle, so you can have also a copy and you can browse through. Of course, I cannot read through 110 responses, which is nice to see, but just looking briefly at your responses in general, we can see customers, consumers, business partners, some more stakes, you and me, employees, investor, customer, government, employees, shareholders, sponsor, works of the company, media. Some of the most classical and primary stakeholders. Very good, guys. All of these are stakeholders, but they do not have the same importance and relevance for organization. And we do not communicate to them in the same way. And we should not actually communicate them in the same way. So I'll get back to my slide now. Let's see here, presentation. Yep. So any of you have seen this guy around in some books, in some site? No, he's dead. He died some years ago, quite a bit of years ago. Maybe you were quite small by then, but that time. But it's one of the most important and key contributors in stakeholder theory and stakeholder management. It's Milton Friedman. He's quite known, not only because he has contributed a lot on the field, but of course he also won a prize, a Nobel Prize for economics in the 70s. And what is particularly interesting about this guy is that he has a very narrow and specific view of stakeholder. For him, thinking about business organization, the only stakeholder that matter are shareholder, those who hold some shares, also known as investors, financiers. Those are the ones that the organization should spend resources, time to dedicate to build good relationship with them, because they bring money after all. The rest, nope. Obviously, today the situation is much more complex, and it has been challenged multiple times, and on these assumptions that he presented and argued for. Let me see, use this one instead. You have been reading and looking at the concept of stakeholder, and one thing I want you to pay attention is about this term, stakeholder. If you look at a dictionary, what is a stake can mean many different things. It can mean an interest, so something a bit more loose, I'm interested in something. But it could be also some form of general involvement or even engagement. At some point we say those who have a strong interest in something, they might be willing to engage in that. What is very interesting about the definition of stake is that it can include tangible and intangible things. A tangible things could be a property. You buy a land, you build a house, you go and buy this, you own that, right? You can put your feet on the land. This is very tangible. But you might be also have a very intangible yet material things, like, you know, you invest your money in some small company. You don't really hold anything in your hands. You cannot really touch that thing. But you have a material stake on this new business in this new organization. Or you might have an intangible and non-material things, like we speak, for instance, when we think about reputation, meaning you don't hold anything, and you cannot even count it in monetary terms, what does it bring to you. With this understanding, Milton Friedman's ideas that only shareholder matters is kind of not valid, not, it can be counter-argued, because many other individuals might have intangible interest in the organization or even seeking to get that interest. Of course, as you will move on and understand, when you get into even more business studies, there are limits on the capacities and the resources of organization or how much they can dedicate. And so they will have to prioritize, to list, to categorize the stakes from those most important or not. And here again, there are quite a number of variables how they can prioritize. Here I mentioned some, and I'm sure when you will dig more into this literature, you will see that availability resources is often mentioned, the capacity of withholding or grant some kind of stakes, so being in control of something. That is a very good example of employees. If employees don't go to work, don't go to the factory, there's no production, right? There's a machine doesn't go, but some machine nowadays will go by themselves, but anyway, there is a need of some people monitoring those machines and runs. And if they don't go to work, there is no production, and this is affecting financially the organization. So they have a capacity to withhold through not appearing in the factory to affect this organization. Now, holder, it can be something like that on the picture up there. So pants holder, clothes holder, something that keeps together, something that keeps together. And sometimes we think about stakeholder as individuals. So some of you said you and me when I ask you who is the stakeholder. Yes, we are. But it could be also an institution. It doesn't have to be a physical person. It can be another organization. It could be also an association. And to a broader context, could be also the whole society a stakeholder. Today, particularly when we move into discussions of environmental issues, climate change, sustainability. This, who is the key stakeholder of this? Is society, is the future of the next generation. So it's not that we point to a specific organization or individual, but it's a very broad sense. Now, these individuals, which we call stakeholder, are labeled like that. It's like I come here and I say, what is your name?
Thomas.
Thomas, you are my stakeholder. I give you this title. So from now on, we are in a relationship, and I will dedicate my time to build that relationship. That's a stakeholder. And you might go say, what's your name?
Ero.
Why Thomas has this good relationship with Chiara and I don't have it? You are a stake seeker. You might be willing to want to have that relation, and we'll try to do something to build that relationship. We have nowadays also individuals like that that try to seek their attention organization. Sometimes they do it in a positive way because they really want to be included. Other times they do because they are very mad. Very mad organizations, so they do actions to seek their attention, to seek that organization respond to their concern and questions. Those are stake seekers. Organizations should not forget about their stake seekers, but they have, again, different way to communicate, to approach, to relate to them. And then we have the stake giver. That could be some individuals, organization, who possess a lot of resources, who are positioning, who have a nice social capital. When we talk about social capital, we talk about relationship. Let's say how many friends you have, 5, 10, 20, 30, 100. How many of these you can count and you have good relationship. Now, if you are in a very good circle and you have a lot of connections and people, you might be able to introduce to one of your friends someone who he or she doesn't know about it, so helping to create four new relationship. These are stake givers. Some organization individuals who help connect with a focal organization that could be your business or whatever organization. Stake givers have a very important role when we build relationship and have also a very important role as in communicators. Sometimes stake giver can be also as influencer. Is this a concept that familiar to you? Influencer, maybe those guys that are active on social media, TikTok or something, who looks at these celebrities talking about organizations, brands, and so often. They also act as stake giver, intermediary in this relationship. Again, with these kind of individuals or organization, we talk and we relate differently than the other. We don't do the same things because we are trying to leverage different kind of relation. Here on the screen, you might see one of the most classical definition of a stakeholder. I think some of you in the slide actually has mentioned this definition or some element, affecting or unaffected. That is very important because sometimes we think about stakeholder only the ones we organization are affecting in terms, for example, of product supply or in terms of work, job positions, in terms of community building activities and so forth. But actually, stakeholder are also those who might not directly connect with us in the forms of employee, customer, consumer, might be the ones that are able to do something on us. One of the most typical stakeholders for organization, particular business organization, are NGOs, non-governmental organization, not-profit organization, like Greenpeace, Red Cross. These kind of organizations are stakeholders. They don't really contribute to the performance of companies, but they can affect these companies' operations in multiple ways. Greenpeace is very famous to having these big ships in the sea, and where they dig in the, for example, in the Gulf of Mexico, oil, the oil drift, to send these ships to boycott the drilling in the ocean because obviously they have concern about the environment, another stakeholder, and they sometimes enter in coalitions with businesses through actions that might boycott or might alter these operations. So they are important because while they are not affected directly by the organization, they are affecting their opportunity or their activities in a certain way. So summing up, when we think about stakeholder, we need to think about that normally. If we think about someone or an organization that holds a stake, we need to identify an organization. Where these stakes belong? Where does it stand on? We need to think about that normally the stakes are associated to clear objectives and clear goals. The organization needs, for example, to produce some product or services. And that there is some dependence about this. And that dependence creates consequences of implication. Questions, comments? Not at the moment. So this is again how we see normally the stakeholder view. On the center we have an organization. By the way, here you could actually put any kind of organization. Now in this Freeman model we have the firm, so business organization, but you can technically put also public sector, a municipality, an NGO organization in the center. And map up similar kind of stakeholder. We put also competitors here because obviously the organization need to be attentive of their competitors, what they are doing and not doing. We have the environment, as we talk about. We have the supplier. Many organizations anyway rely on a network of supply. We have the politician, local community, and so forth. Now, this model is not feasible anymore. Albeit is very much promoted. This is how it looks like today. Very messy interaction. Because we have, gladly, a lot of new technologies, digitalizations, and way of communicating and interacting. We don't really need to go to the company and ask, okay, what have you been doing in the last 3 months and in terms of activities for your employees or for the environment? We can find out this information online, right? Or if not directly online, we might find someone in the network who has that information. So stakeholder relations today are very messy, complex, and very interrelated, connected. Which means that when organizations think about, okay, I have this stakeholder, I want to build the relationship we talk about, I want to communicate and use communication to build this relation, how do I do if these different stakeholders start to talk to each other and say different things, or even how do I get to connect with maybe more loose stakeholder? That's also an important question that we need to address. Yeah. Given the importance of communication and corporate communication in the setting of relationship, perhaps this is something will come even more evident as you start moving forward with the reading and the activity in this class. You will see that there are some, what is in this column, stakeholder, which you also mentioned in your slide, which need to be all the time in the key focus of organization, particularly business organization. For NGOs and public sector organization, of course, they don't have literally consumer, but obviously they might have citizens as consumers, so they provide public service or have their donors, if they are foundations, or if they have their activist instead of consumer there. But they are having similar kind of distinct relationship. With this one, we are really working to develop particular type of relationship, particular type of activities, which are often also today bidirectional. Bidirectional meaning we are not just simply providing information like through newsletter, website content, campaigns, we'll do some of this, but we're also trying to have a more bottom-up approach, asking them to contribute to our conversation. Maybe some of you have been participating to some online competition, maybe some company or brand ask you to, I don't know, create a new logo, a new image for a campaign, or opinions about the launch of something they are working on. That kind of bottom-up activities are very much in line on this constructive view of communication, build together a sense of the organization. But then we have also this kind of loose relationship with these other stakeholders, which might become central to our relationship when we think about the stake seeker and the stake giver concept I mentioned before. Another little activity for you. This time, I want to know what you think is a public, which is another concept related to this one. So like before, please screen it. And then we look at the result. All right. This maybe was a more tricky question. I can see we have a little bit less responses, but quite interesting ones. Every human being, every average consumer, people are not stakeholder, customer, government, society, the citizen, everyone can have access, all individuals, people, the media. Quite a number of different kind of groups. And actually, let me get this one in the full speed. You are all both right and wrong on that, on those answers. So I'll get you. Yeah, I got there. Yes. Because sometimes the concept of public and the concept of stakeholder use is interchangeably, like a synonymous of the other. But they actually mean something different. And then there is the other also tricky part that maybe is with the English language that sometimes is confused with the public, which means more like the mass society, which is not in strategic communication, public relation. Classical definition of public is a group of people who face similar problem, recognize the problem exists, and organize to do something about the problem. Now, if you compare this definition with the other stakeholder, it looks a little bit more pessimistic or negative, because essentially a public is someone who has something that concern or bothers about what we do as an organization, and something that might not be necessarily a group or an individual that we care about as an organization. And that's true, that's true. This is actually the main differences between these two concepts. Stakeholders are often related with some kind of contractual or social relationship with an organization, and we as a manager define this relationship, and publics are more like kind of stake seeker in a certain way, but more about related to the situation, the issues. That is to say, sometimes they overlap because we might have stakeholders that start to develop some issue, or let's say they wake up and say, I'm not really happy with what this organization is doing, for example, and then they turn into active publics. Active publics are quite difficult to address for the certain way. Think about when you relate with your friends. If your friends, let's say, didn't like something you did to him, to her, when you start talking after, for instance, a week or something, it might a little bit sounds bitter, right, the discussion. You feel that there is some tense and it's not the same. It's not the same way of when things were working nicely. So again, it brings us an additional challenge. How do we address at the same time the relationship with those we care about, and we take care of those publics that thinks we have been doing something that is not sufficiently good or addressing their concern. Often, to become an active public, or you'll say to know that this organization is affecting you, we gain that awareness through communication. So the public concept is highly connected with communication. How do you get to know about your friends, your family, the company, the brand you buy product. Of course, you search online, you read, you watch, you share through different means of communication. That knowledge, that awareness, that brings you to form an opinion, again, through communication, which might bring you to a certain level of activation. There are quite a number of models, and I will not talk about those. So I don't know if, Matthias, you plan to talk about the situational theory of publics later on, but that have looked at prioritization, similar as a stakeholder. So how do we rank these different publics? And one of these look at them as these four categories, non-public, meaning these individuals have not become aware that there is some issues there around maybe their community, their society, or their organization. So they don't see at that point in time that they face a problem. But that's actually quite a short time, because they very easily become, today, especially with technology, at least aware of the situation. And that's are the latent public. As soon as they start to gain insight, knowledge on the situation, and increase this concern, and knowing that there are also other individuals that share the same things, they might start thinking, can we do something about that? If they think they can do something about the situation, make a change, they activate themselves, so they reach the later stage, and they become involved. This is a particularly interesting situation because, as I mentioned in my title, we talk about polarization today. And for polarization, we look at the society very much divided, a little bit like white and black or right and wrong. Today, a lot of organizations and individuals take positions of different things that could be about diversity issue. It could be about abortion, use of guns, it could be about the environment, and there are those who deny the issue of climate change, those who think it's really important. So they really move from one side of the issues to the other. And that makes very difficult for organization to decide how to respond that. We know it's impossible to please everyone. We cannot please every stakeholder, every public. We have to take some stance, and we have to think about the implication about that. I'll say a few words about this one. We take a break then after, and then we move into more the issue part, the component, and how this is affecting my communication. But these slides essentially visualize a little bit the relations of these two concepts. So in a certain way, publics are much larger groups, or let's say a broader concept where stakeholders are inside that. And in the business context, of course, organizations tend to, unfortunately, look always at yellow, the yellow part, or that's where it matters most. I say unfortunately because today many of the critical or crisis situations actually start from the green side. And then they move inside the yellow because of the network relation I showed you before, where different kind of players influence others. So even if we are extremely good and build the relation with Thomas and his friend there, we might turn out they will hate us if they talk with the rest and the rest thinks that it's not good enough. So we have to also think about the green today, and that's why it gets even more complicated than in the past. Okay, I think I'll stop here and think maybe if you want to stretch your legs, or how much we give, 10 minutes, 50 minutes? Are we ready to restart? Yes? If someone is on the corridor, could you wave them so they know we are restarting? Yes, thank you. Come in. Oh, you have the hammer. Please don't knock it on my head. All right. Yes, get sit in. So now that we talk about stakeholder public, I know I start with gear one and two. If you know how to drive cars, you know the gears system. But now there are also automatic cars. But now I'm going to move on third and the fourth. I'm going to start accelerating with the next slides. So that we have time also for your question, now that we have the basic concept in place. So now that we know that relationship with organizations, between the organization and stakeholder are messy, are polarized, and we have these other individuals, organizations called publics, that might sabotage or interfere when they feel there's a concern in our relationship, why do organizations need to take care of that? Maybe some organizations don't see the value in that, but hopefully soon they will realize that if they don't take cares about their stakeholders and their publics, they will be very, very big troubles. Very big troubles, because first of all, of course, there will be out of business, not consumer, not customer. If these are not happy, they will have issues in finding their raw materials. Nowadays, with the very close conflict in Ukraine and Russia, I don't know how many of you are following that, but the EU has made a long list of sanctions for the Russian market, which, talking about politics, is affecting heavily many organizations who had operation imported raw material from the Russian market. So that's very big consequences for their operation too. And this is actually a conflict that business have not chosen to be in, but they are thrown it into there. There is also a more important fundamental element, is that we all have a very different kind of set expectations towards organization of our kind. And this expectation, beside obviously the more basic ones, that could be related to the product service they offer or the work employment they offer, are very moral and ethical, that brings them into totally different kind of discussions. And that's why today we are seeing more and more corporations talking about ESG, this environmental, social, and governance issue, sustainability, helping, for instance, in building democracy, particularly with activities in third countries, on developing countries, and also in conflict mitigation. I was just last week in a conference where I present a study on Finland, on the Finnish population. Maybe some of you have replied to my survey, who knows? When we look about the role of business in conflict mitigation, what can they do and what do they stakeholder perceive about that? Would they grant a better license to operate? Would they give them good perception, good reputation? Would it give them a price, for instance, paying more for the product if the company showed this engagement in helping conflict to mitigate? Obviously, one important fundamental thing we should not forget is that with the core distinct stakeholder, once you see here on the slide, the ones you, most of you actually mentioned, we have additional responsibilities or concession, and there is quite a number that are also regulated. For instance, in financial terms, we have to report certain kind of information as part of the fiduciary principle. Now, I want to show you these slides, and move quickly, as I said, I'm jumping a bit fast now, because this is actually from last year. This is an international organization, McKinsey, and does consulting and monitoring the situation around the globe. And I thought this is quite interesting because it brings in some new data, recent data, on expectation, stakeholder expectation of business organization. So on the column there, you see some key stakeholder: consumer, the government, the employees, the investor, and retailers. And then on the horizontal line, the topic they care about, the topic they would activate or to do something about it. We have brand authenticity as an important topic for them. DEI, which means diversity, equity, and inclusion, another big topic today about rights of different kind of groups. Sustainability, integrated experiences. So how do they get engaged in organizational activities in an integrated manner? And the future work, so the employment conditions are the key important element. The colors underlines that these expectations are not homogeneous. So certain group would have higher, so the darker the color, the more important is that issue for that particular group. And now, only by looking at that, think about how would you communicate if you are an organization that does all this activity, you want to be perceived as a very authentic brand, who very important value, who you want to communicate, you want to show that you care about diversity, you want to show that you have sustainability issues, integrated experiences, and also you offer good employment condition, and you have different stakeholders. You need to have different kind of communication. Now, In the old times, communication was conceived as a one voice idea. So organizations should speak with the same voice, with the same message, with the same content. Today we think of communication as an orchestra. They are different instruments who play different notes, but all together they have to sing a song, and it has to be a good song. So all these different stakeholders and different issues can have their own communication that might be different as far as all together they play a good song. Okay, let's skip this one. Why does communication matter? I think the old times pictures will tell you a little bit about why we work in this operation. Obviously, from what I've said so until now, it will become apparent that communication is an important function in informing about the activities of these organizations, is an important function of advocating. I think I use these words advocacy quite a lot because it's becoming very important. And that connected with persuasion, although persuasion sometimes has a more negative tone, but also as the function of engaging. When I mentioned that today, we try less to push content and more to engage individuals and stakeholders in co-creating this content, these ideas. Yes. So if we want to sum up on the value of communication, what I call communication value chain, I think that four boxes there are kind of the really, really, for one bit, the essence of what we do in communication. We operate to increase awareness, whatever that is, the topic we want to make people more aware. Sometimes we might actually do the opposite, try to hide, but that's always not a good strategy, at least not in long term. We help understanding, and we do this not just externally to consumer, customer, or shareholder, investor, or the government. We do also internally, because conflict and issues come also inside big organizations, so we need to have understanding. Sometimes we do bridging with our CEO. Often in large organizations, those working communication are sort of advisors of the guys operating more on the financial terms or running the business, because they have a very narrow view of the market and the activity, and they don't listen and watch around these other groups of public. So we are sort of like, you know, the eyes, the ears, and sometimes the mouth of these organizations, and help them understanding the perspectives out there. We create acceptance. Sometimes it's not easy to mitigate polarization of these different contrasting dissents and things, but we try to some extent to build situation where even if people disagree, there is an acceptance of these disagreements, so that we acknowledge that the other entity is not in line with us, but we know what is the standpoint. And that's very important, because in many kind of decisions in organization, there is not like a black and white. There is quite a variety of colors that we can take, and we need to find the ones that is more suitable. And then we build commitment. We use communication, power communication, to engage our stakeholder individual, to commit to something we really care about it. And that's very important. It's very important because things don't change if there's no commitment. If nobody does anything, if nobody spends some energy, time, or dedication in a cause, on a situation, on activities, the project itself can go very, very badly. And then again, it's applicable both internally and externally. When we do this activity, informing, creating awareness, understanding, acceptance, we might sometimes operate on this model. This, by the way, is one of the classical communication model. If you got to know more about, there is quite a lot of theory and models explain communication. This is the very traditional linear model of communication. Some of you have might seen from Shannon Weaver, a sender, meaning me or an organization, through a particular channels, send a message to a receiver that could be you, could be someone that is at home today, or and there is noise. We have a lot of noise today, and that could be due to the technology, but due to also other interferences related to the environment. This is a follow-up model from the 54 by Schramm, which kind of also consider this element, but it's more dialogic. What it's actually trying to say is that, yes, if we are communicating through traditional media, television, newspaper, radio, often it's linear, yeah? We hear and or we watch. It's not really conversation with the television, unless we engage in some kind of double device interaction with the phone or another tablet. There is not really much interaction with the people in the television. In our situation, we often adapt our conversations and our questions and activities based on feedback, right? What we hear, we're trying to adjust and rearrange that. So that is why we have a loop. This model is very useful when we want to create an understanding, a commitment. We can't use the model number one if you want to move beyond, let's say, with a higher level of engagement with your groups of individuals, simply because you will never know if they understand, if they agree, disagree, what is their opinion. So with the first model. And then we have this one. This is a more recent model, the Barlos model, which has a main difference, zoom in the characteristic of the messages and the channels and decoding and coding. We have so many channels today. I'm pretty sure many of you are active in many, many different channels. And all these channels have different characteristics, and they are not all suitable for the old kind of communication. Some channels fit better for certain type of communication, other for a different kind. Sometimes we don't even need a channel, like in public affairs, a lot of negotiation, discussion with politicians are closed-door meetings, face-to-face. So we talk about interpersonal communication there. We don't need a channel. Other times we might need one of traditional media, for instance, or have our own corporate channels. What is this interesting is that, as I mentioned before, is that there are, of course, also today a lot of platform tools even to synchronize, organize this communication, particularly when we think about communication on the, where the pointer, on this one. There are very many apps and softwares that allows us also to synchronize our communication to our consumer customers and also gain that. But for the other two, it's much more complex to navigate the multimodal vocal communication. We talking about model, we are now much more active in monitoring, and again, much easier because we have so much of data available online. So every time you're logging on the site, you browse something, you are on social media, you leave traces of your activity, your preferences. Of course, nowadays, with some regulation, there is a little bit something we can do about controlling at least some of the privacy setting what we release to company. but there is a lot of potential for leveraging and listening and monitoring what individuals, you and all of us, are doing online. And that knowledge is very, very precious. There are even companies who make business out of this, so selling this data to others for whatever purposes. This knowledge is really, really powerful. One thing I want to mention as we move up to the discussions of that, of course, social media monitoring is important, but more importantly is listening. Listening is different than monitoring as we move into a certain understanding of the issue. You can monitor trend, you can monitor conversation, but to which extent you are really actively considering what are these individuals saying about the organization and do something about that. The quote on the yellow one is not of a mouse here, way. It's actually a quote from a professional I took away and put here on the slide, who actually described why matters listening compared to monitoring. I'll read it. So, often the problem or issue, and this person is talking about organization, exists long before it goes to the public, so to the visible view. Yet little is done to address and resolve it, these issues, or worse, is covered up before it escalates. That can be a single trigger, a rumor, a leak, a stakeholder action, and this can catapult an organization into a crisis in a very short time with devastating effects. Many organizations know what they are entering on the turbulent times, turbulent water. They are not listening. They are really thinking, well, it'll go away as it comes, and not spending sufficient time to understand the origin of these problems. When we think of an organization, we try to address, is this a good starting point to engage in a conversation? We always ask ourselves, is the communication response we propose it addressing the problem? Are we really answering to this concern, or we just turn around and talk about something deviating the conversation? And is this also follow up by action? Because remember, actions speak louder than word. You can have campaigns, you can have nice messages, events, but then if the organization doesn't follow what it says it does, then it looks really bad. When we think about that, we have to think about interplay of these three elements. I mentioned before the bridging, when we think about how communication professionals can help organization listening, monitoring, taking care of relationship with a stakeholder, the stake seeker, and the public. So the bridging, bring the societal, the concern inside organization. We can buffer in sometimes, and that's the more defensive response, meaning trying to diverge a situation, move away, cover it up, or else proactively advocate it. And that's where now we have seen a growing, a lot of big companies are advocating. They're not really waiting to bridge in a buffering. They are just proactive advocating for what they really care about, what they think their key stakeholder care about. Perhaps last 5 minutes, I'll give you an idea also about issues and what is a crisis. These are also two concepts. I think the last time you also talked about this, and this is a concept also that I dig more and I look into the communication processes in issues and crisis. Are very much related, if you want. In a very simplistic manner, you can think about issues as the little plants there. You need to have someone who waters the plants to grow, right? Otherwise, they will die. They will dry up or they will freeze if it's winter time. And that's essentially what is in a crisis situation. There is someone who is watering over the issue. Let's say you might have an organization who has had a case of internal harassment, very common problem nowadays in an organization. And this information maybe is leaked out in the media. And then some activist brings up from whatever history of the organization, that is wasn't the first time that the organization has experienced inside the problem of harassment. And then more it is, they will find out that the company has no policy to address harassment issues. And then things escalate. There is water coming, the plants grow, and the issues is pressing. In terms of severity, of course, issues are at the beginning, so we can still kill them, the plants. We can still handle, and they don't cause any major dysfunction of the operation of the company. Crisis can create dysfunctions and affect operation. And there are some crises which can be very devastating, especially if some people die out at, like, plane crash or boat sink or explosion in a factory. Those are really major. And there is another layer that we need to address there that is related with the safety and psychological relief of those involved in the crisis. So the issue in the crisis is, obviously, as I, when I open you today, the conversation was mentioning that one of the things that organizations expect when they hire a communication professional is to solve problems, to solve issues, to keep the public quiet, that kind of things, because there is this idea of more responsive idea of communication rather than proactive engaging and listening and handling the little plant before it grows. Of course, organization learns, but still we see periodically crisis or para-crisis, how we call it, a situation where it looks like crisis, but they are not crisis, because organizations still move on the bottom line here. Perhaps nowadays pathological kind of behaviors of organization is less common, although still that we are some people who just avoid or don't want to have it. Many operate on the red and the green, the red and the orange, reactive to crisis or very calculative. But those more excellent organizations are up on the proactive generative and trying to take the crisis as an event for opportunities, for improving, for getting better and stand out. But then we have this kind of crisis, the one of stick together, a new type of crisis that they are difficult to rid of. And that's totally difficult and also more challenging bargain. And one that we are put myself also in, maybe not as the primary stakeholder, but I work with the number of scholars and people who research in this concept of sticky crisis, looking more at this more difficult type of crisis. Now, to conclude before, because I think we have quite a number of questions upcoming, which I will be glad to answer and enter in conversation with you, a little bit sum up of today. What is about communication and stakeholder? Ideally, of course, we would like to enter in this engagement concept, one that Matthias also has been doing quite a lot of research. And why do we want to do this engagement? Because there are substantial studies showing that the quality of decision-making organization is actually very much related with this engagement stakeholder that is an outcome of relation. An outcome that we can produce through good communication and through their involvement with bottom-up activities. Among the principle of engagement, you see an opt-out communication. Empathy is more a psychological state of mind. Of course, you can communicate through your body language empathy, and that's obviously related. And risk management and take responsibility are the things that I also mentioned today briefly. We, through communication, address risk, address the issues that activate these publics, the green one in the circle, and through the responsibility, we advocate for position that our stakeholder care. So we integrate all these activities in communication. I'm going to stop here and leave it the floor for questions or curiosity or things you want to know more.
Yes, thank you, Chiara. I think my microphone will work as well. First of all, great questions you guys posted on Moodle. I've been trying to kind of collect and kind of condense some of them, maybe connect some of the questions together. And I think the first one is actually pretty much related to this very last slide you, Kiara, have over here. So when thinking about different stakeholders, what is important to remember when managing or communicating with them? And I think you know, some of the principles in terms of stakeholder engagement would definitely work at the general level. But what do you think? Do you have a different approach or strategy when dealing with certain stakeholders? And can you give any examples how you may manage them differently, depending on the situation? Obviously, there are many, many different kind of situations, so it's not an easy question to answer to, but in general level.
So my approach is very pragmatic in this. I always tell also to those who specialize in communication, if you want to be very good in communication, you have first to have to learn to listen and to be curious. Go around your company, your organization, talk to different people, try to understand what they do, how they do it, how they operate, what issue there. Only once you acquire this understanding, you can better plan your communication and know what to do, not to do. Sometimes it's even not need to communicate directly, but maybe you are able to even bring these two individuals who have not talked to each other together after you hear both sides. And sometimes you might be more targeting. There is no one size fit all. So some, of course, there are recommendations in terms of how do you address consumer or customer requests, especially when they're not happy. Because there is also some legal implication, you know, if you admit some responsibility, they might sue you or something like that, a company. But in terms of tailoring your strategies, really starting to listening and actively thinking, who are these people? Why are they saying the things they say? What does it matter for them? Can we do something about that? And to which extent can we do about that? And then that is where you set the communication strategy, you know, what is needed at that point in time. The other filter I would say is that obviously you need to have on board your colleagues in organizations. You might have some great ideas for your communication, but you don't have the support of the senior management board. And that's a problem, not only because they're not going to give you the money for doing all these activities, but also because if they are not the first one who believe in what you're trying to do it, there is not the walking the talk I mentioned. So you might have something very well prepared and everything, but they are doing different things. And remember, there's no more private and public. CEO company are like a little celebrity. When they go somewhere around, there's someone with a phone, take a picture of them, and they might enter in a very difficult situation where maybe they are seen hanging around events of LGBT, for example, community, and maybe some of their customer or consumer are anti-LGBT, and then it comes like a storm because they think that you know the company CEO represent them is supporting that, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but for some might be a contention. So the fact that especially senior member organizations are highly visible today brings this attention on the spotlight, and that means that the listening element is essential for decide what strategy to use and how to address certain stakeholders. And then, of course, look at the contractual relations. So certain communication are very contractual. I mean, if you have consumer customer, obviously, you know, those are their key interests, is the quality of the product services, the experience they get. But sometimes now with more ethical consumption, we have also a number of consumers who look, you know, the origin of the product, the material, where it's produced, whether it's a bio things or not. So you might also consider those elements when deciding how to communicate.
Thank you. I would probably add that as a communication professional, always expect the unexpected.
Yeah, as well.
That's something you need to keep in mind. Maybe a little follow-up on that to some extent. So there was a question actually that many stakeholders are nowadays interested in corporate ethics and sustainability and stuff like that. So and this is probably a little more specific question for you. How to plan communication so that it is not taken negatively and considered only as greenwashing, viherpesu. In Finnish.
Yeah.
So this is also a very interesting issue, where to find the balance, because obviously you can be very strong advocate and persuade and show what you're doing, and then you get into this label there. And there are also cultural differences. There have been in the past some studies conducted in the Nordic region versus US, where they show that the people living in the Nordics prefer more mild type of communication. They feel that, you know, the American style to come up on and speak it, oh, we are doing these great things, and blah, 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 sounds very arrogant and doesn't resonate with their view. So you need to take in consideration a couple of things if you're planning communication related to sustainability or CSR. First, take a look, closer look at the political environment, the policy issue in the country where you want communicated, because they will tell you already the expectation, the regulation. Some of these actually are mandatory. In some country, you need to inform not only an investor, but the larger community about your activities. So you, that could be also a good base to know how much to talk about. Next, you need to partner. I think many times the more authentic kind of communication comes if you have an NGO that somehow speak on your behalf or talk with you about the issues, then you look more authentic. Next, you also have to think about how your communication aligns with what you're actually doing and your values. If it looks too much and that, you know, that you are not really in reality doing the things, that doesn't look greenwashing, pure greenwashing.
Thank you. Then a completely different kind of question. I think in the course book, Cornelissen talks about the integrated communication and the differences and similarities between marketing and corporate communication. But Chiara, what is your take on the differences and similarities between marketing and corporate communication? How would you define
it? So the disciplines are really sometimes kind of construct that we do academically and less professional. I think many individuals who professional who work in small, medium-sized enterprises, they'll probably do both marketing and communication at the same time. However, not to diminish the marketing colleagues, I think they do a great job. They have very specific, narrow views on what is the purpose of marketing and what communication should provide to marketing, which public relation, for instance, one of their 5 P's on publicity and advertisement. In the corporate communication field, we look more broadly at a very different set of stakeholders, not just those on the central consumer, customer, and client, but we look at the network relation that might have from regular citizen, people working in the government, NGOs, activists, even terrorist organizations, criminals, all the set of kind of stakeholders that activate themselves for a reason or another on issues, and we try to bring these holistic things. We do obviously also help, and that's an important function, corporate communication, an important function. We help other functions in the organization. We help the marketing to market their product, their brand. We help HR to help bring this employee commitment and value set. We help those working in more finance to be able to communicate the performance, the result, and make this leverage in the market, because obviously also the market fluctuates a lot about information, the financial information that's disseminated. We help the CEO on this bridging things. We do a lot of different things on the strategic level. On the basic level, of course, when you start career in communication, they will make you doing campaigns, messaging, and more the content kind of things. But as you move up on the ladder, there is much more strategic thinking relating the complexity of issues and how these different things move together and integrate like a puzzle. So for me, I would say the marketing is very specific, very narrow. At least the communication in marketing discipline is very specific and narrow compared to corporate communication, which brings quite a number of different kind of issues and also requires also different kind of expertise. When I teach the corporate public affairs, I also teach my students to think about also in political terms. So they have to refresh their political science knowledge about how laws are created, regulation, and things like that, because that's where they try to influence.
So it's kind of complex in a certain way, but I like it. It's fascinating and brings kind of different views every day.
I think also add something. Maybe one of the main differences is that marketing is probably more focused on the business organizations, because if we think about corporate communication, we can actually, and we need communication outside business organizations as well. If we talk about public sector organizations, some non-profit organizations, for example, okay, they do some marketing, but I think in terms of communication, there is a more broad approach.
Yeah, well, it you can say so, but to some extent, also public sector politicians use marketing technique, especially when during election campaigns. They do really strong marketing activities. And even fundraisers and NGOs are trying to collect money, they employ some marketing techniques. But obviously, it's not their main purpose or focus area in that sense. Like, could be a business organization which also lives by selling the product and services. Obviously, that's more prominent there. But I mean, as I said, sometimes the vision is a bit blurred, and there is... In practice, when you look at organization, they are jumping a bit here and there. But I would say the corporate communication discipline brings this kind of more broad and more variety of understanding on the table without downplay or upgrading one over another, whereas obviously marketing as the sales as a main objective and the performance, which brings a certain stakeholder more upfront than others in terms of decision-making, what to do and how to communicate.
Yeah, and like I said, I think Kornelissen has done a pretty good job in your course book actually to show the differences and similarities through that integrated marketing approach. So you better check that out. Two more questions actually. This is more of a timely question, maybe a little future oriented as well. So about artificial intelligence, of course it's a hot topic right now. So what is your take on how it is going to change and impact corporate communication? Do you see any negative or positive impacts that artificial intelligence will have on the field?
So all this technology that are growing and also their acceptance is growing should bring some positive benefit for different kind of activity, professional activities. My take is kind of neutral in that. Of course, some communication professionals are a little bit afraid that AI and all this technology will replace communicator, because obviously they can write text and send messages. And there are many of these apps, actually, if you set them, they spread messages a certain time of the week and become very valuable to collect data that you can use to monitor, analyze and trends and issues. However, going back into the strategic role of corporate communication, we don't have yet these tools. They don't have an ethical and moral stance, these machines. They just make some predictions based on what they find online. And I think the more ethical decision-making of those chief leaders is on the table. That means that sometimes you overtake a decision. Let's say maybe your financial director will say, this is the more logical investment action we should take, because it's the one that we forecast brings more value and profit. But then you know that it's not the right things to do, because there are other things happening in the surrounding and you might undertake that. The machine will not tell you to do that for sure. So in my view, certain things will become more automated in communication, but the strategic thinking and the complicit things is not yet that on the machine. So and if needs someone who is capable to oversee, like an helicopter, bring these pieces together and see where it makes sense, how to use it, and thinking on the implications of those actions and communication related. And that means that we take communication as a means for informing, awareness, commitment, understanding, but also as a means also to move things around. And that's where today many of the top tough leaders that there are in the world, they are really bringing to more these discussions on how communication has helped them move forward and what is the the listening part in their activities, how important it is for their business operations.
Yeah, and we will actually have Jukka Niittymä on, if I remember it correctly, on fifth lecture in this course, talk about more on the role of artificial intelligence in the field of corporate communications. So we probably will have interesting discussions around that topic as well. Yeah, maybe we have time for one more question, and I think this is probably the most important question in terms of motivating you guys to learn more about corporate communication. So, Chiara, what is your take on why should any of you basically take corporate communication as a major here at the business school? If you are studying at the business school and you have a chance to choose us as a major discipline, why should they do that?
Because in a very globalized, interconnected world as we are, you cannot communicate, you cannot avoid communicating even with your body language. And if you know and understand the processes that brings into communication and the effort they produce, not only you're better in control of yourself, but also you might be more effective whatever job you're doing. And this is not to say only for promoting, but it's really when I talk to top leaders, they're not themselves coming from communication. They are taking communication afterwards, because as soon as they get up on the ladder of seniors, they all say, you know, we need to understand this better. We need to know how to do that, communicate, engage, interact, see the big pictures, and even if you're good with numbers or with other aspects related to with business studies, I think you need some communication no matter what you're going to do in the future. So that's my selling proposition for you.
Thank you, Chiara. Yeah, I think this was the last question. I think we are starting to run out of time a bit. Again, apologies for the room that you couldn't all fit in. We are going to meet next time on the main building. There should be plenty of room for all of us. And yes, there will be another visiting lecture next time. Anni Kosunen will talk about more on strategic planning in communication. So see you in a week at C1.
And feel free to reach out if you have further questions.
Yeah, if you have any questions, feel free to ask. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.